Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 227. Tonight's show is brought to you by Here Kitty 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 Kitty.
And I'm going to go first.
No.
I want to go first.
Before that, you may hear a washing machine running.
For good reason.
That's just how it's going to be tonight. And yeah, now go. Quickly.
All right.
You still can't.
There's not going to be any speed here. I'm going first because I am wrecked. That's R-E-K-T, wrecked. Today, I went out to mountain lion hunt, and I unexpectedly found a very fresh mountain lion track. And I sent on Garmin InReach a message to a friend of mine who has hounds. I said, hey, I've got this track. I've been trying to like follow a track and actually like chase a mountain lion. And I'm not really physically prepared to do that right now. And so I, you know, called up my friend with hounds and he said, I'm working, but I'll send a buddy of mine out. And then he lets me know like half an hour later, he's like, he's on his way. And I responded back, I'm just going to stay on the track. And when the dogs catch up to me, I will just let them take over. Because it was pretty fresh. There was a chance I was going to catch up to it first. Like, who knows? And it just turned out to be one of the most difficult mountain lion tracks I've ever followed. And there have been a good number of them. And this one was fucking terrible. This cat went up a little creek drainage for, I don't know, maybe a mile and a half or 2 miles. And then just went straight up this, like, nearly vertical wall out of this creek drainage and up to the top of the ridge. And yeah, I just kept following it and track was getting better and better. And I found a spot where it had killed a deer and shoved it up under a tree and had been back there a few times. And not long after that, the hounds caught up to me and they immediately, I could hear them. They are very loud and they made a big circle, which mountain lions will circle when something is chasing them. And pretty quickly after that, they got the mountain lion in a tree and I shot it. And yeah, I've got a freaking mountain lion. It fell out of the tree and slid down a hill into a canyon that was full of like blowdown and stuff. And so I had to leave it out there, but it's like 5 miles from the trailhead. And I was not physically prepared to hike 10 miles with a couple of those miles being straight up. And so, yeah, like my entire body is absolutely wrecked right now, but I'm really happy. Like I may not sound like it because I'm fighting everything off. I did take some meloxicam, so I might feel like a little better in a little while, but yeah, so I'm pretty stoked. It's a nice tom mountain lion. It's not huge, like not one of those gigantic monster ones, but it's not one I would want to be face to face with in the woods for sure. And yeah, I got my first mountain lion, so I'm freaking happy.
Yay, she did it.
I did it.
That's pretty fancy.
I'll sit here for a few more minutes. But what were you saying, Kenny?
Oh, I just said that's pretty fancy.
Yeah, it's fancy as fuck.
Do you?
But Matt and I are going to go get it. Matt and I have to go get it tomorrow.
Do you eat mountain lions?
Yeah, you can totally eat mountain lion. It's supposed to be a lot like a lean pork. It's like a pretty light meat. And yeah, I'm really excited. I'm going to check the pricing on it. I think I'm going to get a soft melt made out of it, which is basically where a taxidermist, being that this is my first mountain lion and I really don't want to screw it up, I'm not going to take on doing this myself because I want it to be really good. It's pretty special. And yeah, so I'm going to send it to a taxidermist. There's one on the Front Range that does soft melts, which is basically where they put like a like pillow batting inside of it with some wire armature and you can like pose it. So it's super, super lifelike. It's not, you know, like something that's just going to sit. Well, for one, like we don't have a place for a hard-mounted mountain lion to sit in our house, especially not one this size.
We don't have room for a soft-mounted one either.
You know, it'll just like lay at the foot of my bed or something. I'll just have a mountain lion on my bed.
Is it going to be like the whole thing?
Yeah, whole thing.
Yeah, this is a really bad idea.
But yeah, so I wanted to do that. I've got to look at the price. I mean, if it's like, I don't know. If it's super expensive, I won't. But they tend to be less expensive than like the full, like a hard mount taxidermy, like traditional style. So yeah, I think the soft mount's going to be the way to go.
Could you just do half of it?
You could for like regular stuff, but you wouldn't just like soft mount the front half of a mountain lion.
You should do just
I
want to
have the whole
half.
Thing. The tail is amazing.
Just the back, like directly in half, but only the back. So it's just a hind legs and a tail.
You should get it hard mounted in two pieces and then put it on opposite sides of a wall.
Well, I like it too because it's just, I don't know, like if you ever look at good soft mount taxidermy, like it's so lifelike and just really cool. Like you can like not necessarily interact with it, but it's not like just something that sits around, you know, and collects dust, like that you just look at. Like you can, you know, I don't know, make it lay on the foot of your bed or curl up on your couch or whatever. Like it's really cool.
Are you illegally allowed to taxidermy people?
I don't think you are in America unless you're like a museum or something.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah. I don't remember what else has gone on this week other than that.
You went for an e-bike ride.
I did. I went for an e-bike ride.
And you bought a new pistol.
I did buy a new pistol. I didn't use that on the lion today, but I did get a 22 caliber pistol. It's a small caliber pistol and a suppressor, which I don't have the suppressor yet because I have to get my approval thing going. And I plan on carrying that with me when I elk hunt. I archery elk hunt usually, and I like to shoot grouse while I'm out there. And most of the time I hit the grouse and have grouse for dinner or whatever. But like one in maybe like five shots, I'll just yeet an arrow into the just like fucking orbit. And I've lost too many arrows and it's very frustrating. So I just want a small pistol that's going to be quiet that I can use to shoot grouse while I'm out there.
Which one did you get?
It is the Smith & Wesson P22X. It's a relatively new, relatively new model.
I just got one of those.
They're great.
Yeah, I put a red dot on it.
Yeah, me too.
Amazing.
It is like.
So y'all better not get your guns mixed up when we get together and shoot guns.
Well, hers will.
Do you
a
have
can
a suppressor?
No, yeah. Not yet.
Oh yeah, you got to get one of those. I think every firearm should have a suppressor. They're just amazing. Like I was able to shoot my mountain lion today. Like I've been. Up until I got the suppressor from my AR, which is what I use for lion hunting. You just want to have, like, the ability to make multiple quick shots if you're, you know, in range of a lion and you're by yourself. So that's what I use for lion hunting. And, yeah, like, I didn't have to carry ear protection. Like, I could skip that step in the shooting process of just, yeah, I can fire a few rounds and not have to worry about, you know, being concussed after I shoot.
Is it 300 blackout?
No, it's just 223.
Gotcha.
But it's, yeah, I mean, it definitely took the mountain lion down. And it would have with one shot, but since I was hunting with dogs, my first shot was really good, but it was like wobbling and kind of looking like it was about to die and fall out of the tree. And I thought, you know, the last thing I want is for this lion to like jump out of the tree and fight dogs, these dogs who I don't own. And hunting dogs are expensive, right? Like, they're not only like someone's pet. Like, these were obviously, like, they're very social and, you know, like, they were, you know, they were happy when I told them they were good dogs and everything. And, like, you don't want those dogs to get injured at all. So, yeah, I shot it once and it was definitely going to die. But I was like, I don't want it to jump down and, like, hurt a dog before it does, so I just basically shot it two more times just so it would just ragdoll out of the tree and slid down the hill. But yeah, I'm excited.
Well, that's cool. Do we want to just go backwards? Kenny, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Well, you normally go second, so.
Well, yeah, I don't know a lot about science, but I think I'm still going second.
I know. I was going to say, so even though we're going out of order, before you got all fucking smartassy, I was about to say, you're going to go where you belong.
Sorry, it's my go-to move.
I know it's your go-to move, but fuck you.
Rode moto, met up with some people, rode 5 Mile Pass, which is just really close to my house. Everybody was on gas bikes, and it was a good time. So everyone was on 300 Enduros for the most part. And yeah, it was a good time. A lot of fun. It was surprisingly muddy. Definitely dusty in places. It's that weird type of riding where it's actually full on dusty And then it'd be like a little bit of hero dirt. And then you get to a north face slope and it was just full slop. So it's without a doubt probably the muddiest, maybe tied for the muddiest I've ever gotten a motorcycle. It was pretty crazy, but had a good time. Only laid it down a couple times, all pretty tame stuff. But some of that stuff, oh my gosh, like I'm on 50-50 tires and 15 PSI in tubes. And everyone else is like on proper enduro tires. And I think maybe one or two people were on mooses.
I think, Kenny, we do have a moto suggestion in our listener questions for you tonight.
Okay. But anyway, we all were all struggling just getting up some things because it was just that it was not obviously muddy, which is insane. It just was that 1-inch thick snot that was...
That like peels off.
Oh my gosh. It was just unbelievable.
Greasy.
I mean, I probably pushed the front end to verge of crashing 167 times. Like so slip and slide. And sometimes you would actually be standing still, completely still. And you're just trying to like get a little momentum real nice and easy to make it up some hill. And you would just... From a dig, you would just teleport sideways because you were on a 1-degree slope. Just crazy stuff. But anyway, had a really good time. It was fun. What else have I been doing? I think that's really everything of note. I'm going to go probably down south this weekend and do some mountain biking so we can talk about mountain bikes. But it's we got our first snow in a long time here this week, so kind of off limits here for riding. Although I think pretty much the entire state got snow. Did you guys get anything?
We barely got... A little bit. It was just enough to hunt, and it stayed cold, so it actually held pretty well. So, yeah, we're supposed to get some tomorrow, which is going to make retrieving the mountain lion pretty interesting, but we'll leave early, and we'll bundle up and leave early.
What's the probability of something else getting to that thing?
You know, like a fox or something might nibble at it. That's definitely a possibility, but yeah, I'm hoping it doesn't. It's also, it's pretty close to the spot where it had like a deer carcass, so I'm hoping that most of the stuff that's, you know, in the area that wants to eat dead things is going to hone in on that.
Like, what do you think is the highest probability if something got to it? Like, obviously you said fox, but like, are there bears out there?
No, bears are still hibernating.
Well, and also for the fox, the gut pile's out there.
Yeah, there's a gut pile, and foxes will definitely go for that. It should be pretty safe.
So you were able to like I guess what they call that, field dress it?
Yeah, I did that, and just because of it being like in a steep spot and it being a pretty decent sized cat, like just physically couldn't get it out of that spot by myself. Like, we're gonna have to go and I'll have to like skin it in the field, and then we'll have to like probably take the meat off of the bone and put it in a couple of game bags and pack it out like with backpacks, because it's like, I tried to drag it a little bit, and it was just going to get really fucked up by me doing that. So I didn't keep doing that. I made like a bed of like tree branches and stuff, so it wouldn't freeze to the ground.
How much do you think, after it's been field dressed, like the way you're going to essentially take it out, what do you think it's going to weigh?
I don't know. Like, once it's, you know, like the meat, just the meat is probably not going to be more than 50 pounds if I had to guess. And then what's that? Oh, my phone's ringing. It's all right. I'll get it later. But, yeah, I mean, it's probably less than 50 pounds of meat. They're not quite as, like, meaty as, like, a deer of the same weight. Yeah, I mean, but the pelt will definitely be a substantial amount of weight also. So, you know, we're going to end up probably packing, like, 70 or 80 pounds worth of lion out of the woods.
Gotcha. Well, anyway, that's all I've got. Matt?
I rode my bike.
Yeah.
So I did a trainer ride or two. Also, can you hear that fucking washer through the microphone?
I can't hear it.
Great, because it's annoying the shit out of me. So I rode the trainer. I got my gravel bike finished. Proper frame size. That's how I rode the trainer.
I'm going to go and return my phone. The phone call was probably from the guy with the... So I'm going to go return that call, and I will maybe be back, maybe not.
She won't be back. Close that door when you go through. Okay, so I rode the trainer, finished up my gravel bike, right size frame. Haven't gotten to ride it because the weather got kind of sloppy. Let's see. So did that. I feel like I'm forgetting something that I did. I didn't weld anything this week. I sold my Subaru.
Whoa.
And I...
So you no longer have any Rovers, right?
No Rovers.
And no Subarus?
No Subarus.
So you just have some Nissans and some Jeeps?
A Nissan and a Jeep. So one of each.
So wow, no cars.
No cars.
All trucks / SUVs.
Yeah.
And you have it's a Wrangler, not a Cherokee, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. 97 TJ, 5-speed, 6-cylinder, inline 4.0 with 2.5-inch lift, winch, swing out tire carrier, bumper, no rock sliders, soft top, heat, no AC. Like from factory, no AC. It's not like it doesn't work. It's just not there. Let's see. What else does it have? It has a winch and... Yeah, it needs a few little things. It needs an oil pan gasket and a valve cover gasket, just, you know, older motor stuff. It runs fine. It runs great. It just, you know, a little bit of sauce leaks out. But.
I think you've talked about it. Does that have that super popular inline six motor? Is it 4.0?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got the Iron Duke in it. The one that... The world shows you can bounce it off rev limiter a lot, and it just eats it. So, I haven't done that yet. I don't think I will.
I mean, there's probably not much of a point to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, let's see. I went for a mountain bike ride, got out on the canyon, went ripping on it, and it was all going great, man. I was like, man, been riding the trainer a little bit. Feels good to be outside. It was really warm. I was riding in bibs. A jersey, and it was just the right kind of weather where I left with this ultra lightweight jacket that Rich Dillon, aka Dickie, told me was a good replacement for the Gore Shake Dry jacket. I don't remember what it is. I don't remember the name of that jacket off the top of my head, the replacement. Let's see. For the longest time, what? I don't even remember the brand right now. Gosh, because it's not because. I don't know. It's the same thing, though. It's a panty weight jacket that fits in your pocket, and it has stretch in it. So it's not your normal windbreaker that's just all, like, loose. Like, it's a race fit over jacket, and it's slightly waterproof and windproof. And it was great because I got a little hot, and I took my jacket off. And then when I was in the shadier part of the trails, I was, like, just chilled enough that I'm like, ooh. I'm a giver, and I was getting after it, and I know this trail really well, and I come around this, you do a little bit of like climbing stuff, and then you start traversing and just following the contour of the land, so there's a bunch of little like drainage crossings where you know, maybe drop 8 or whatever feet, and then just, you know, sit 5 to 10 feet, let's say, and you just pop right back up after, you know, you go down around a little corner right back up. And then you kind of go over the edge of that little ridge and then down around and back up. And it's a great little section of trail. And I was like, ooh, a new, like, again, I know this part really well. And I got to the top and I'd had my seat like a little bit down and I popped it up and just started like reefing on it. And I blew the biggest fucking hole in my tire that I've ever blown in anything. Luckily, it happened at the bottom. And there's, again, a little like, let's call it a 6-foot rise. And between using my front brake and just the hill itself, I was stopped in 25 feet of trail, and it didn't hiss, it didn't spittle, went and stop. I look at my bike real quick, or my tire, and I was like, well, that's not what you want. And I laid my bike down, and I'm like, I'm going to find what did that. And I walked back, and I saw this piece of, like, probably, I don't know, Jake's like screaming at his headphones right now, but it was one of those heavy rocks. Like, if you move many rocks, you know that the gray blackish ones are heavy as sin. It was one of those, and it had obviously tumbled down the hill recently in a geological time sense, because it was still very sharp, and it had sealant on it. And I was holding it, and I was like, we don't need this here. And I just like underhand pitched it off the trail, like downhill. There's no, it doesn't switch back or anything. It was just into the like void of the forest. And about the time I heard it hit the ground, I was like, damn it, I should have taken a picture of that.
Some geologist is going to find that, and they're going to like run a, whatever they call that, an assay or something on it, and be like, wow, this rock had ammonia in it.
Yep.
And then they're going to make some improper conclusion.
Yeah. So luckily, my ride and Andrea's e-bike ride were the same day, same time, same car ride. And for whatever reason, I was like, ah, I don't really want to leave my wallet in her car. I'll just take it with me. And boy, howdy, am I glad I did. Because also, about halfway through the ride, or halfway through the, let's call it the interesting part of the ride, and I only rode for like an hour, including getting back, but I'm going along and I'm like, man, I don't have all my little stuff in my bag on my frame packed away well yet, because I just heard this weird noise. So luckily I have my wallet, but I'd heard this weird noise, and I opened my bag, and my Lazine pump was in multiple pieces. And I was like, cool. So I guess first, let me see if I have any cash in my wallet to use as a tire boot. And I did. And I was like, second, let me see if I can get my pump back together so it'll work. And I could. And I aired it up and it held air. And I knew like where I was and where I needed to go. So I only had to ride maybe like less than a quarter mile of trail still. And I went at a snail's pace. And then I was able to ride down an access road to another road to another road back to the shop where Andrea was going to pick me up. And as I was cruising down the roads, anytime there was a like stuff in the road, these aren't like well-traveled roads. You only drive on these roads if you're going to the trails. Like if you wanted to drive up to park it sort of like a upper trailhead and hike your dog or whatever. And I was like leaning my bike over to the side because I could put my thumb through the sidewall of the tire. Like, and not through a slit. It was a triangle shaped cut out of the tire. So yeah, I made it back to the shop and all is well. So all that said, up until the time my tire flatted, I felt great. Like I was just cruising. Wasn't really riding hard. You know, I'd jam on it a little bit here and there, but like wasn't riding hard, but wasn't like dilly dallying around and like just being out in the sun. It felt so nice and everything was so fun. Yeah.
Which bike were you on again? I missed that part.
The old Canyon Lux.
Gotcha.
And it was a Maxxis EXO tire. It didn't want to do tire things
anymore.
Yeah,
but I mean, an EXO is hardly any protection. Was it an EXO Plus?
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very standard thickness tire. I mean, basically
I know, but
XC thickness.
Yeah, but I ride EXO tires on my stump jumper.
Sure, sure.
I've never done that to one of those, so.
And I think that's a lesson where, of course, is a thicker tire going to be more reliable? Like, yeah, it probably is going to be.
Are you going to one day hit something that all tires
yes.
fail to?
That is
absolutely.
That is correct. So don't make snap judgments because your buddy got a flat on some tire one time.
Yeah. And it is just one of those things. I mean, I say it like that because I don't know. I don't want to say I don't care, but like there was a lot of little things at play there. Like maybe I wasn't running enough tire pressure and the tire pooched a little bit more and the sidewall grabbed more. I was trying to run lower pressure than I normally would ride on the stump jumper, but I'm not going to ride the Lux like I ride the stump jumper. Didn't have an insert in, so that probably changed the sidewall pooch a little bit. I don't know. I'm not worried about it. Like when I say I don't care, like being all pissed off about it's not going to change it. Like it's no different than that time at Sulamo pre-riding. I hit a rock and it flipped over. If you can imagine, this rock was, just to make it up, it was shaped like a hot dog and it was propped up like a seesaw. And I ran over the high end and it flipped over and broke off my valve stem. Just sheared it clean off. Like, what do you do? You know, that shit just happens sometimes. You know, you can't stop it all. So.
It is so crazy how many rocks hit the inside of your rim hoop, like dead on the inside of your rim hoop.
One of the craziest rock problems that I've had is I ride left foot forward. I hit a rock with my front wheel. It bounced off of my right shin, fell onto my right big toe, and I guess it kind of like was tumbling. And it hit my down tube sort of like, if you can imagine, if you drew a straight line from the leading edge of your chain ring to the back edge of your water bottle cage, it took a little paint chip out of my frame right there. Like, how? You know, it looks like someone threw a rock over my shoulder at my bike. And no, I was ripping down the trail and I kicked it up. It hit my leg. It landed on my foot and my frame and fell out on the trail. And I was like, ow, that hurt. You know, like it's the same thing of like, you know, they find where bullets collided in air on Civil War battlefields. Like, you know, you do enough of anything and everything happens. So yeah, that was my week. And then cool shop news. We got a shitload of Vettoria tires in this week, so that was a good bit of my day, was doing some reorganizing and stuff, so it's cool. It's cool. The season is coming, and I'm pretty excited for it. So, new stuff time. Let's see. Giant Group founder King Leo passes away at age... No, Leo. King Leo. I looked this up. I actually tried really hard because this is a person and they've passed and they contributed a lot to our industry. And I'm sure that I still don't have it right, but it's spelled L-I-U. And I'm like, I bet that's not pronounced how my southern brain thinks. So, yeah, founded the Giant in Taiwan in 72, co-founded Giant Manufacturing in 80, and he passed away at the age of 93. And that's a bummer. Because Giant makes a bunch of people's bikes, and whether or not you've ever owned a Giant, there's a very high chance you've owned something produced by the Giant manufacturing company. So pour one out for your homies. Make some tea. Look at your bike and thank those that came before us. I don't know. And when I say make some tea, I mean have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or just like a non-alcoholic beverage of some sort and just look at your bike and be like, man, a lot of really cool people did a lot of really cool things so that we're here today riding really rad shit. Thoughts?
On just Giant in general?
I mean, just in general, like, I think it's something that folks our age need to really grapple with. Like, not grapple with, but accept. Like, most of the people that did the cool stuff, that there's a good chance they're going to pass in our lifetime. And that's kind of a bummer.
It's interesting that, I mean, clearly not all cycling, but definitely anything even remotely mountain bike related, that's where basically we, like you and I, are only one generation removed from that, basically.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff's still pretty new.
Pretty new.
Let's go into not sad stuff, or let's go straight into making fun of something. Crank Brothers released a Plug Mate tire anchor kit.
Hmm.
So it's a plug with an anchor. So it's like a Stan's dart, but not.
Gotcha.
The only thing that I can say is, it's a Crank Brothers product that's not an M17 multi-tool. I have low hopes. So yeah. Let's see. Kona is coming out with some updates to their sub-$1,000 hardtails. Not something that happens very often. So that's pretty cool. We sold Kona at Absolute Bikes, and I always thought they were cool bikes. I mean, maybe their full suspension bikes are a little bit meh, but they're a lot like the Marlin for Kenny. You know, he's like, it's just a good bike. Like, the Kona hardtails were always just a good bike. And I mean, when I say $1,000, we get a aluminum frame, 11-speed drivetrain, Judy air fork, tubeless ready wheels. For $999. That's pretty tough to beat. So that's cool. Let's talk about something Kenny might care about. Did you look up the Shush noise canceling chainstay protector from Diedbro?
Let's see.
For those of you at home, it's essentially a glue-on version of what like Santa Cruz makes for all their full suspension like trail bikes. Those are all molded and just fit their frames, but it's a silicone chainstay protector that's ribbed for your audible pleasure.
That one color they chose on the purple bike is really ugly. Like, that's the worst one they could have picked, I think.
You know, they come in black. That's good. The pink one, ugly on everything.
Well, it's a lot of things. It's oddly, like, what's going on with it? Why does it have the other It's got weird paint lines and a strange fade. It looks like a bunch of vertebra, and maybe that's on purpose. No. But also the outside is like oddly textured. It's like veiny. I don't want that.
It looks like a tentacle.
I don't like it.
Well, don't buy it then. Buy the black one. I think they do that thing. I think when you mix silicone colors, you can essentially take pink and black, which is the other color here, and you stop mixing them. You don't mix them until you make dark pink. You mix them until it's like streaky, as if you were making like a hard candy or something. If you've ever seen people do the like candy pulling where you can, you know, put swirls and whatnot in there by not mixing it fully. It looks a lot like that, which I don't know. I think there's a reason they make it in something this wild and then also black because, you know, it's not for everybody. Then they have shuttle pads too, which I don't understand the shuttle position of a mountain bike. So that's not a project or a product for me, but I'm sure that it is much more elegant than using a piece of old tire zip tied to your bike. So it's got that going for it. And it says the adhesive is a high bond residue free 3M backing, which is just VHB tape. It's that double-sided foamy tape that's more gooey than like open cell foam, and VHB stands for very high bond, and that stuff works really well. I learned about that when I worked at the sign shop, and it's good stuff. I used some of it to mount magnet strips inside of a toolbox here at home, like on the lid, and it gave me no problems. It didn't fall off, and when I wanted to take it off, it was actually much more difficult than I wanted it to be. So, and I'm not saying difficult like it was a pain in the neck. It was difficult like I'm holding the toolbox lid with one hand and trying to pull on it, but it's a toolbox lid, so it wants to close when I pull on it. Getting this off your bike won't be the end of the world, but also it won't just fall off. It's not going to be sad. So that's all I got on that. I thought that was pretty cool because quiet bikes are nice, and not everybody makes a cool chainstay protector for their mountain bikes. So now you can buy one for the low price of, how much was it, $40? Yeah, $40. I think it's worth it. So you want to talk about these Renthal pedals?
Sure.
They look weird.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why the clip is offset, but I'm sure there's reasons.
I don't think the clip is offset. Bear with me. I think the pedal has extra platform on the outboard side in order to give you more foot support. You know, you can only grow the pedal towards the bicycle so much before it interferes with the crank. Whereas on the outboard side, they could make it bigger.
I guess I don't understand. Like the full flat pedal thing, not the one on the right, not the black anodized one that's like kind of normal trail SPD-like, but the flat pedal one that has like a SPD growth in the middle. I guess I just don't understand
why
you would ride that. Once you're clipped in. I mean, I get you can put a flat foot down in tech sections for a minute before you get clipped in and et cetera, but would you ever actually like really ride that for any meaningful distance or anything with a not clip in shoe?
No, I think the real move is you clip your shoe in and then you adjust the pedal pins to where they're actually touching your shoe.
I guess, but like there's no way those outside ones are touching your shoe. So it just means you got more shit hanging off the outside that you're going to pedal strike is how I look at it.
Hey, I was just going to say that I haven't found pricing yet.
I will say from the bottom picture, they are showing that particular shoe. I don't know if that's like, looks like a 510 maybe or something like that. That's got a clip option to it. The more sneaker style one, maybe that would fit. But if you used any even remotely trail or XC clip-in shoe, there's no way you'd be touching that outside part. I don't think. Could be wrong.
Well, it's a downhill pedal.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're neat. Not my cup of tea.
They're pretty expensive, and they're not made by Shimano. So, eh. Now, let's talk about something. We don't need to talk about that. That doesn't matter. We're going to talk about this. Starling announces production 3229 mullet, the big bird.
Yep.
It looks really heavy and really expensive.
It looks all those things. And the aesthetic of the back is very odd because it's got that weird rear shock that makes my brain hurt because it's got a tiny little stanchion and it looks like a coil shock without a coil on it. And yeah, something about that I don't like.
I don't like it either.
It just looks too weird to me. I just don't know what the benefits of that are, to be honest. But hey, I don't know. Maybe it's, hey, we built a coil shock, but we want to make it an air shock. I don't know. Someone smarter can explain that to me, why that's a cool thing. But yeah, the aesthetics are weird because it's super skinny in the back, including the shock. So the whole like rear triangle setup is very odd looking. Yeah, crazy steep seat tube angle. Just aesthetically, I'm not digging how that thing looks.
I'm not either.
It looks like a also very strange science experiment.
It only holds one water bottle cage on the bottom of the down tube, from what I can see, or bottom of the top tube.
I am seeing that.
Boy, that makes my brain hurt. But it is promising because that means that someone else will do it in the future.
Yeah, we'll see a lot of cool 32 stuff coming up, without a doubt.
I think Sea Otter is going to be nuts this year.
It's going to be, yeah, I think 2026 is going to be year of the 32, without a doubt.
And for everyone that's like, oh, they're just making these, the industry's just doing this because they don't know what they're doing and they just need to come up with something to sell it. Like, okay.
Well, also, exactly. Of course.
Let me be a jerk for a minute. It's going to be awesome. Okay. So let's go back pre-32. That was it. We only need 190 forks with four piston brakes with 225 or 240 rotors or whoever makes something huge with 38 millimeter stanchions. And we only need an electronic dropper, and we only need electronic shifting with universal derailleur hanger, full mount, with pedal underload shifting like you wouldn't believe. We only need power meters. We only need wireless droppers. We only need radial tires with inserts on carbon wheels with a bird, you know, spokes, and Onyx instant engagement or Industry 9 7,000 points of engagement hubs. Like that was far enough. You know, the industry, we don't need all that. Okay, so let's go back to rigid rim brake 26 canties. Oh, you don't want to go back in time that far? Where do you draw the line? You know, is it a beach cruiser? Because you can ride a beach cruiser. It's a bike.
Why do people get angry? Brake. Why do people get angry at new choices and more options and stuff? I mean, if anything, the bike shop should be the one to groan because now you got to like stock more stuff to keep more people happy. But as the consumer, what do you fucking care? I just don't understand. You have more choices. And if you like your old shit, then ride your old shit.
Keep riding it.
Like, just keep riding it if it's that amazing. But that person who's groaning seems to sound like the person that doesn't actually know what they want, and they're supposed to be dictated what they want by other people, and now they're mad that they have to buy other stuff because they can't make their own decisions.
Yeah, and, you know, I think I brought this up on the show before, but I read the history of mountain biking probably a decade ago. And the one big takeaway that I have is mountain bikes were 26-inch wheels because 26-inch wheel, like 27, 1 1/4 was like an adult road bike or touring bike. 26-inch wheels were considered kids' bikes, and the wheels and tires imported under a different tariff and were cheaper. So 26 it was. So we haven't really had three wheel size. Like, the industry made a financial decision to do 26-inch wheels forever ago. And, you know, let's round up 45, 50 years ago, right? And then we made 29, and people said, oh, it'll never work. And now 29 is ubiquitous. And then we made 27.5 because 29 wasn't perfect for everyone, and everyone rolled their eyes. But we don't see 26-inch bikes over $1,000 really anymore, outside of maybe fat bikes and some very niche bicycles, right?
Even 27.5s, you don't see a lot of, outside of really small bikes or budget bikes, you don't see a lot of front-wheeled 27.5s. Like, they're just not a thing anymore.
I'm going to go as far as to say, Kenny, 27.5 front through axle is pretty much non-existent. You know, it's going to be a QR bike because it's a price point bike.
Yep.
And we're finding that mullet works really well. I don't like it I don't like it because I'm tall. You know, I'm 6'2". I enjoy a full 29er. It's also what I cut my teeth on. You know, I maybe rode a few hundred miles of mountain biking on a 26-inch bike before I bought, like, and it was a borrowed bike. And now I own a 29er, and I've ridden 29 since then. And, you know, I don't need mullet. But if mullet works great for, and that's the thing that like bugs me, is if mullet works great for a 5 foot rider, why can't me as a 6 foot two rider have mega mullet?
I think, you know, you're a 32-29. I think you're definitely going to end up on mega mullet.
I think I will too. And this is one of those that I'm trying to not rush, and because this is so new that, and I'm just spitballing here, so I'm going to make up names. You know, let's say Andrea Bikes releases a mega mullet tomorrow. I'm not going to buy it.
No, because I think you should totally wait until there's more options. I think 1 to 2 years.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is like, because then, you know, Smith Bikes might come out with something in 6 months that I'm like, oh, shit, that's way cooler. And I'm just going to let things kind of shake out and see what happens. You know, I think that Newhouse had a teaser photo of a bike, and it was a 32, and it had an orange. The photo is extremely blurry and very far distance, but it's an orange fork with orange uppers. So it's probably a, you know, factory Fox fork. So it seems like Fox has a 32 coming because the photo's been teased. But again, we're in February. When's Sea Otter? Like March or April?
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark, yeah.
Let's see. April, you know, so we're 2 months from Sea Otter. Sea Otter will be closing 2 months from the time we record this. So, yeah, I mean, we're early enough to start getting some of those little teasers. You know, Vittoria says they're going to make 32-inch tires. Cool. Great. You know, and everyone is kind of equating this over to Plus Bikes. Well, the problem with Plus Bikes was trying to tune all of that tire and tire compression and rebound, you know, so we're getting a bigger rolling diameter than 29 plus. And I know 650 plus existed as well. Have three options of tire that are larger than 27.5, 2.6 in the shop. I have one option of tire that is 29.30. So he goes from 2.6 to 3.0. We have no 2.8s in stock. And where I'm going with that is like, that didn't work that well because you had a lot of uncontrolled air. You know, you needed to run enough air to keep your rim off the ground, but then you had nothing controlling how that air performed. You know, there's no damper in your tire. You know, you have a damper in your air fork. You have a damper in your air shock. So I don't think that the 32 is going to see the same, I don't want to say problems, because I don't know that that was a problem, but like user issues, because you had to get your tire pressure just perfect. So, you know, it still being a 2.4 casing, I understand the air volume is larger, but the amount of tire to flex and squirm is in line with the amount of tire that we've seen previously. And I understand the contact patch is bigger, so it's going to feel different. Maybe we're going to be running a little bit more pressure because we want to bump that contact patch up or down a little bit as the air pressure goes up. I mean, just spitballing here, but there's a lot of cool stuff that's going to happen, and it's going to happen in the future. So I'm trying to not rush. I mean, 29 is sick, but it's also, you know, it's the only wheel size I've really ridden. So when something that's mainstream and kind of ironed out comes along, yeah, I'm gonna swipe my credit card for it. Probably tap it in 2027 or 8, but more likely I'll be employee purchasing it, so I'll type it in. But again, you know, it's just something that I want to try, but I don't want to try it now. I want to let some others work out the kinks. And also, I don't want to be in a situation where tires don't exist. Like, tires exist right now, but can I buy a tire anytime that I want to? I don't know. That might not be the thing. You know, there may be a time that you need a tire and you can't get a tire because there's not tires. So, I don't know. What other thoughts do you have on that?
No other thoughts.
No other thoughts. I got one that I know you're going to have thoughts on. Over-the-air Levo 4 update increases e-mountain bike power by 18 to 22%.
Yeah, it's it's going to make a lot of people angry. And a lot of people are angry. Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's until I can be told that this makes a legal class 1 e-bike / class 3 e-bike, since it can do both, I'm not convinced. And yeah, 750 does not equal 850. So that's all I got to say. I think there's other things too. We've had, it's pretty rare, But we've had quite a few people overheat the Gen 4 motors. And they're rallying these things. They're just click it in turbo, go as hard as you can. But they're overheating. So this is clearly not going to help that. So just throwing that out there. And there have been some mild complaints about battery range with the Gen 4 with a pretty large 800 plus watt hour battery. And that will get even worse as well. So obviously hugely user dependent. Depends on how you have your bike tuned and all that stuff. But clearly it's not going to do good things for battery life. Yeah, I think Specialized is really scared of the DJIs of the world. And they're just, they don't want to be left behind, quote unquote. And I think the right answer was to maybe flex a little bit of legal muscle and whatever, play some politics. And basically, I mean, I hate to say tattletale, but they need to bring awareness to the DJI and say like, look, that thing makes a lot of power, but that's not a legal trail bike. And I wish they would stick to that and then let people know, hey, this is not a legal bike. You guys can buy them and they might let them be around for a little bit, but they're not going to be around for long. But now I think what we're doing is no e-bikes are going to be allowed anymore. By the way, there was another little piece of possible legislation in, I'm going to get it wrong. I think it's California. And California has proposed that, and this is at least a little bit better, but it's a slippery slope. They say all class 2 and class 3 e-bikes are going to require a license plate and whatever else comes with that. And I think that's just a proposed thing. I don't think that's passed. But see what's happening here? I don't want to say I told you so, but I told you so.
Turn your e-bike into a motorcycle and now it's treated like a motorcycle.
That is correct.
Or have your e-bike not fall under the regulations and guidelines that have been proposed and in place for many years, and suddenly you are legislated outside of those regulations.
And I wish it's the harder route to go, but I wish Specialized would spearhead, get with other brands, whatever, and lobby for either changing the rules, either change the e-bike class 1, 2, 3 system in your favor. So if you want it to be 850 or 1,000 or 1,500 or whatever you want it to be, get it changed where you are legal and everybody else is legal, or make the DJIs not do what they're doing because it's against the rules. So now you're going to have a very popular bike, Alevo Gen 4, that will not be legal to race in e-bike classes because they have a 750 watt limit, which they got from where? From the federal guidelines of the, I say federal, that could be a mistake. Whatever the actual class 1, 2, 3 system is recognized as, that's where they pulled that number from. They pulled it from those guidelines. So now you can no longer race your Levo Gen 4, and you also can't call your bike a class 1 or a class 3. And if you live in California, they're going to make you put a license plate on your Gen 4 Levo. So congratulations. That's all I got.
Cool. Listener question?
I'm back.
Excellent.
Yes. It's equally as uncomfortable for me to sit on the couch as it is for me to sit here, so I figured I would just grace you all with my presence.
Well, then start reading questions, because you said we have to hike a bunch tomorrow, and I want to go to bed.
All right. We've got one from Patrick. Patrick says, for Andrea, I was screaming at my phone when you were asking about knee pads and people giving you dumb suggestions. Find a pair of double knee work pants that you were comfortable in and throw a knee pad in there. They are soft and thin and won't impede your hiking. Then he gives me a suggestion. I have some from Fall Raven and I have some Carhartts. Carhartts are definitely not comfortable to hike in. The Fall Raven pants are extremely comfortable. I really like those for, I mean, they're like, I have 3 pairs of them. That's how much I like them. But my oldest pair, actually my oldest 2 pairs, I have 4 pairs of them. One of them is not usable anymore because I absolutely munted them. Part of that being I was putting knee pads in them. I was doing like gardening and stuff like that in them, which definitely puts a lot more wear and tear on the knees. But they get holes in that top layer pretty quickly. My oldest pair that's still usable is, the knees are pretty ripped up from doing that. So I kind of do want like some pull-on type knee pads. But yeah, like that's definitely that's definitely like something that I would consider. But yeah, it's got to be more like a technical fabric, like the heavyweight Carhartt stuff. Like while those are much more durable, they suck to hike in. Like that material, if you sweat a little bit, it just stays moist, and then you get cold, and yeah, not great. But yeah, I mean, I do like knee pads and pants, but not exactly what I'm looking for. And then we've got from Midget Money. He says, Matt, I ride trails in enduro and have tried several things. Wait, that's not it. Sorry, I was reading the wrong question. This is a long email thread. This is for Kenny. I can sense you are curious about trying a two-stroke enduro bike. Having rode both trials bikes, KTM 300s, Husky TE 300, etc., I think you may like the Beta X Trainer 300 two-stroke. The size is more comparable to your Ultra B, and it has very smooth power delivery. Since I like the trials bike and ride primarily the hard stuff, the size factor is kind of the perfect. The one thing about them are the forks. They aren't good. I sent them off to Amp Suspension in Montana, and they came back amazing. They feel like a Z1 Bomber from 2007. Haha. Anyway, might be something good for dipping the toes into the T world. You can find them very cheap used, too.
Yeah, so I've ridden an X-Trainer, and they're interesting. It just wasn't for me. Something about it I just didn't like. It could have been the suspension. It could have been that it was like an inch lower. I know that I said I like the Emoto thing because they're light and they're lower and all the things, but it's like a whole package that kind of works. And also, I mean, to be honest, I am spending more time on the gas bikes and the bigger bikes and the heavier bikes. And I think it just takes it. It's a time thing and it's a confidence thing. I think starting on the Emoto was really beneficial, and I still like a lot of things about them. But now that I'm more tuned to a full size moto, like 12 inches of travel and normal ground clearance and all the regular like full size enduro moto stuff, I'm getting more and more comfortable on them. I'm far from being an amazing rider, but you know, the more time I spend on my Husky, it's a 350 for those that don't know, so four stroke, I'm really liking it. It's a really, really good chassis. It's not a full enduro bike by any means, but it's got incredible suspension. It's got really smooth power delivery. It's street legal. Not that you, I mean, we live in Utah, you can street legal anything, but it's just one less thing. It's just easy. It is not loud. It's not smelly. It's pretty darn reliable. I can run it at a single RPM. I can run it at 80 miles an hour. What else can I do? Yeah, it just kind of runs. Now, granted, that is a decent amount of money sunk into that thing. I do have a 3/4 inch lower seat, and I really, really like that. It's really, really good. But having that full ground clearance and the full suspension travel is also really nice still. So I'm pretty happy with that. And it's got a left-hand rear brake, and it's got a Recluse clutch, and I think that's about it. So not an insignificant amount of money to make that happen, but I don't know. I'm really happy with my 350. I think I understand the two-stroke thing. I'm not doing a lot of enduro riding right now. I definitely Ooh. Will like tickle that a little bit, but I just don't have that group of people that I'm doing that with. I'm not saying that won't change in the future, but I do a lot of solo riding and a lot of exploring. I just, 350 four stroke that street legal is a way better tool for that job. Would I like the thing to be 20, 30 pounds lighter? Like, yeah, that would be pretty darn cool. But yeah, I don't know. My bike works really good. It doesn't flame out. You can basically never kill the thing as far as like stalling it. So anyway, I'm pretty happy with my bike. Totally good suggestion. I totally see where you're going with that. And like I said, I rode an X-Trainer, and yeah, I was not a huge fan of it. I've ridden quite a few other 300s, like regular, normal, full enduro 300s, and they're cool. They're great bikes. They're clearly, it's the thing to do for enduro riding and or unbelievably aggressive trail riding. But I mean, I don't like two strokes. I just don't. I don't like the maintenance that goes with them. I don't like the reliability. They're just not for me. In fact, on this ride, somebody had a brand spanking new 300 Husky. Very nice bike, like a 2026. And it's got 15 hours on it. and randomly in the middle of the ride for no reason, hadn't been idling or any of that kind of stuff, it just stopped making power. So, yeah, I don't know. Not my jam. Not saying it won't change, but right now, not my jam.
What about, have you considered, like, it sounds like for the trip this weekend, the cheapest and most comfortable thing for you to do would be a second wheel set.
What do you mean?
Oh, like with some knobby tires?
Yeah, like have a wheel set set up ready to go.
Yeah, I think that's a super reasonable thing. But also, I don't know. My tires are still not the problem. I was still able to get up and down all the stuff that we did. It was fairly rowdy riding. I will say it's a zone that I've ridden a lot before. And I used to only be comfortable doing this stuff on the Ultra B, which is fairly high horsepower e-moto with decent suspension and proper 1821 full motocross tires on it. Like soft compound, all the stuff. Like should be, it's a perfect light enduro bike. And I rode all that same stuff on the Husky. And, you know, outside of just mud walls, which nobody's making it up, at least not on the first try. I don't know. Even with 50-50 tires on it, that thing, it did all
You have to remember, Kenny rode a lot of fast tracks. So now he's got like fast tracks on his moto.
No, you're not wrong without a doubt. But I do a lot of exploring on this bike. This is my adventure bike. I know that sounds weird and stupid, but it is my lightweight adventure bike. I'm not into camping, so I don't need to like have the whole moto camping thing. I'm not saying in the future I won't do the full adventure thing where you like, you know, load down a KTM 890 or whatever. But right now in my life, that's not really what I'm after. I want a capable off-road, fast enough motorcycle that I can just go explore stuff on, and if it turns to single track, it's zero problem. That's what I want, and I think I've got the perfect tool for the job right now.
It's your cross-country motorcycle.
Yeah, it kind of is. They have a whole class of motorcycles called cross-country motorcycles, and mine's not technically that, actually, but yeah, that's kind of what it is.
All right.
We got one more from Tyson. Tyson says, what's your guys' favorite type of sandwich and favorite type of soup? Matt's rules apply. I couldn't think of a good bike question, but wanted to submit something. Love the show. Listening for 9 years now. UTF.
So we're saying,
very quickly, Matt,
in Matt's classification, a sandwich just means that there is like a, what is your definition again? That it's got like a base that you could wrap something up in?
It's very simple. This all stems from the question, is a hot dog a sandwich? And my answer is yes, because bread is the utensil that transports it to your mouth, generally speaking. Just because you eat a hot dog with a fork, it doesn't mean that it's a soup. But I'm going to give you a couple of quick examples.
So simply, if you can transport it into your mouth without utensils, then it's a sandwich?
More or less, yeah, like a pizza is an open-faced sandwich.
Yeah, pizza's a sandwich. A burrito is a sandwich, et cetera, et cetera.
Cereal is a cold soup. And spaghetti, pretty dry soup, but it's still a soup. And so in those words, I think what he's saying, what's your favorite thing that you shovel into your mouth via bread? That would be sandwich. And what's your favorite?
A carbohydrate of some sort.
Yeah. I mean, and when I say bread, like, well, then a taco is not a sandwich because it's not bread. Yeah, but like you look at South America and they make tacos, which is corn flour instead of bread, which is wheat flour. And they put things in their mouth with bread. So a taco is a south of the border sandwich.
Well, like, they haven't figured out bread yet. They're almost there. They're going to get there. I think this is
They have a torta, so they're getting there.
This
so,
is the year.
News and worldwide sandwich domination, that's the year. So, I'm going to say that my favorite sandwich, and I'm going to stick to true definitions here, just to not make people's heads hurt too much. My favorite sandwich would be a peanut butter and jelly with the following. You would have a nice sandwich bread, not a sourdough, a little too crunchy. I want an easy-to-eat sandwich in my PB&J world. I would use spreadable butter, and I would butter both pieces of bread, and then I would apply peanut butter to one side, jelly to the other, preferably a red jelly, you know, like a strawberry, a raspberry.
You just said you peanut buttered both bread.
No, you butter both breads.
Oh, buttered both bread. Okay, I had peanut butter on the brain.
And then peanut butter one, jelly the other. Now, if that sandwich is going somewhere, like on a bike ride, you skip the spreadable butter. You go with peanut butter only. You put a light smear of peanut butter on both sides. You put the jelly more as a dollop in the center. And then you squish the bread around the crust zone. And the peanut butter kind of seals the edges so the jelly won't leak out into the Ziploc bag. And it's really enjoyable to eat after it's been traveling in a backpack for like 2 hours. And then my favorite soup is going to be a good old tomato soup. It's just a good soup.
So can I call like a dumpling? Would that be a sandwich?
No.
Okay.
Because a dumpling, bread just happens to be a component of the soup. The bread isn't the vessel. The dumpling bread doesn't take the food to your mouth. You still use a spoon.
I mean, I can pick a dumpling.
A dumpling is 100% a sandwich.
Yeah, I've definitely picked up dumplings with my fingers and shuffled them in my face.
No, it goes back to my thing of just eating eating a PB&J with a fork doesn't make it a soup. Eating cereal, like I could act like a raccoon and take handfuls of cereal out of a bowl and eat it doesn't make it a soup. It doesn't make it a sandwich. It's still a soup.
You know what I love doing is going to Chinese buffets and going to their wonton soup. And taking like the 10 wontons are at the bottom of the wonton soup and taking all those sons of bitches out of there.
Right. So if you've ever been to a buffet in Utah, if you've ever been to a buffet in Utah and you're like, where the fuck are all the wontons in the wonton soup? It's Kenny.
Yeah. Sorry. I called them dumplings, but yeah, the wontons.
I don't know. I'd say my favorite soup right now is that chili mac and cheese that Matt just made.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That was really good. But that's just because I just ate it and my brain's not working. So the only thing I could think of was a dumpling for a sandwich and that for soup.
I think your favorite sandwich is a BLT.
I do really like a good BLT.
A BLT, toasted sourdough, spinach instead of lettuce because spinach is a little more flavorful.
The crunch
of the iceberg is nice.
Yeah, or like a good, like the center rib of the romaine lettuce that gives it like that crunch. I think that's like the happy medium there because iceberg doesn't have a lot of flavor.
But thinly sliced Roma tomatoes.
Yeah, super thin tomatoes. You got to kind of like if you slice the tomato and then set it on a paper towel for like, I don't know, a minute, then it soaks up a lot of the juice and it won't make your sandwiches soggy. I usually do that. So yeah, that would probably be, yeah, now that you said it, that would be my favorite traditional, definitely a sandwich type of sandwich.
All right, Kenny. Oh, wait a second. I'm going to throw one more sandwich in. Hamburger.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat. All right, Kenny, you go for real.
I would say sandwich is going to be just a good thin crust pizza. Could be pepperoni. Okay. Could just be like a four cheese. Real simple.
Okay.
And I think the best things are the simple ones. So when it comes to hamburgers, if you can't make a good tasting plain cheeseburger, then you suck at burgers.
Like, if you start with a really good cheeseburger and then you put a slice of bacon on it, like, that
just takes it. If you want to add other stuff, that's great. But if you don't
have a good cheeseburger,
then it's not a good burger.
Like a nice brioche bun instead of just, like, the plain gooey white bread bun. Yeah.
Same thing with a pizza. I don't mind a semi-fancy pizza from time to time, but, like, I just want a good quality, basic, not many ingredient pizza.
Yeah, so I mean, like a Red Baron frozen cheese pizza is totally fine.
Great. No problem. And I'm not too proud to smash a Little Caesars.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with it. Anyway.
What would be your soup?
Meat rice.
Oh, hell yeah.
Easy.
All right. Well, that was good. Is it patron time?
It's patron time. All right. Our patrons starting at $10 per month. We've got Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Steve Stash.
That's not spelled correctly.
You still pronounce it the same way.
Okay.
Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Beaver, Pelt, Pocket, Pool, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
You nasty.
No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Autonomic Dysfunction Makes You Unsympathetic. That's a good one. ChatGPT at $11.11 per month. Candace Cockfit at $12 Australian. We've got Dean, 14 Australian Patamillan Disco Ball. At $20 a month, we have Brian, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench. At $26.06 per month, oh shit, it's bacon time. Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast. At 50.
That's it. Shut her down.
All right, everybody. Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.